The views, information, or opinions expressed during Angel Answers with Amy Toys series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily are the opinions of those of the host, BBS Radio, and its affiliates and its producers. The show, its host, BBS Radio, and affiliates and its producers are not responsible and does not verify the accuracy of any of the information contained in the series. The primary purpose of this series is to educate and inform. This series does not constitute medical, legal, or other professional advice or services. The series is available for private, non-commercial use only. Any portion of this series may not be copied, reproduced, or edited without written consent by the host or its producer.
And welcome to Angel Answers. I'm your host, Amy Toy. Today we have an awesome guest. His name is Michael Tibbetts, and he has an interesting background. And I like what this guy has. He feels like he's very multidimensional, and he's a helper. And let me explain what Michael is before I bring him on. He has a 44-year career as a marketeer and educator and as a quote-unquote family healer, working for the past 31 years with families on a global basis, providing them with educational tools and spiritual resources for healing. He has applied the lessons gained from leading his own family's healing journey since 1985 to help hundreds of other families begin and nurture their own restorative ways and journeys. He is currently the founder and chief inspirational officer of his own family healing ministry called the Family Center with a Sacred Heart, and you can find that on, you can find his website at www.myfamilyhealer.com. Please refer to this website for a complete ministry overview. This ministry is currently serving families in 45 states and 30 countries due to the ministry's social media and telesummit outreaches. Welcome, Michael. How are you doing today?
If I were any better, Amy, you'd be scary.
It's always a good thing.
and it's a real gift to be with you today.
Yes, it always is. And it also says in your intro that your spiritual growth began in 1985, and that, you know, that was a pivotal year in my personal journey, too, as we'll get into.
Oh, really?
And you're, yes. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And you're also a writer. Yeah, you're also a writer and speaker of Timeless Wisdom as a Healer of the Sacred Heart. So, wow, you've got a lot going on here. I love that your ministry talks about, I screwed it up in the intro. I'd call this restorative ways, but maybe it was supposed to be said that way.
Oh, that's fine.
Definitely. Yeah, you know, whatever is supposed to be, right?
Well, whatever language you choose to use, you're divinely guided to do. So I try to trust that energy.
That's great. That's great to know. That's great. How would you describe yourself as a spiritual being? That's a big question to ask right out of the gate.
Well, I thought it was a good place to start. My closest spiritual friends call me a Zen Methodist, which means that my core religion will always be Christianity, but I believe there are many paths to the Creator.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I really do, because I was I'm Catholic. But I wouldn't call myself. I'm just a mastery over spirituality or learning spiritual
ways. Right. Are you a recovering Catholic? Are you a recovering Catholic? Or
no, I still go. I actually still go. I take what I like and leave the rest.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Catholicism has a very powerful mystical tradition that most people aren't aware of.
They don't.
Yeah, matter of fact, God gave me the title for the ministry before I knew the significance of the Sacred Heart. And then I researched it. I found out it's the image for Christ's heart. I also believe it's the energy center contained in each of our bodies, located between the heart and throat chakra, where we give and receive God's unconditional love.
Yes. Growing up, I had a picture of Jesus in the Sacred Heart, that where he's opening up his heart, you know, where he's wearing the red, and, you know, the hearts shining out. So, yeah, I've always had an affinity with that picture. It saved me through a lot of things growing up in the household I grew up in.
Nice.
So, yeah, it did. My faith was very important growing up. So.
No, the Sacred Heart was your protector.
Yes, yes, and protected me from doing stupid things, too. You know, and I want to get back to 1985 for a bit.
which we're all prone to, right?
Yeah, we're all prone to, exactly. Hopefully I can help people, maybe like you can, with, you know, our stupid mistakes that we get into.
Well,
but,
yeah. The goal is to try to minimize them as much as possible.
Yes, exactly. Listen, young ones. Listen. 1985 was interesting for me because I was a young girl. I was, I think, 10 or 11. I'm not telling you my age. But I read the Bible, and that changed my life.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're old as dirt, definitely.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes.
Well, you've lived several lifetimes in this one already, so that's one.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and I just remember that being a pivotal year for me, 1985. So that was interesting that you brought that out.
What was most significant? What was the pivotal experience in that year?
Well, I read the Bible all the way through. I was only 11 years old. And I had, I wanted to kill myself, and I didn't do it because of that picture of the Sacred Heart.
Nice.
And because of my angels. So that was a turning point for me. So, yeah, I tell that story a couple times on the show. I don't want to bore my listeners with it, but basically.
No, I think it's very powerful because there are a lot of people thinking about ending their own lives, not understanding that they're most often in a temporary situation, okay, and suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. So, you know,
what
they want to do is end the pain, okay?
Yeah.
But sometimes, well, there's OW in the word growth. So whenever you're growing spiritually, emotionally, or physically, you're going to experience some pain because you're being stretched out of your comfort zone.
Uh-huh.
So what made you to decide not to take that fatal step, if I may ask?
Well, I was looking at that picture, and it was above my bed, and I was crying, and I had the note written and the pills, the bottle of pills from my great aunt. She took Valium. She had a pile of Valium, and I was going to take the whole bottle, and I was just going to off my life, and I kept praying. And I kept praying and praying, and then I felt like the angels, too, that day kind of said, you have a greater purpose in your life, which is what I'm doing now, helping people with my experiences, like you are.
Sure.
So it was that moment that stopped me.
What pain were you experiencing that had you considering ending your life?
My family was screwed up. My father was a raging alcoholic. My mother was a manipulative, also alcoholic, I feel, at the time. I was misunderstood by the people around me because of my gifts, being intuitive. And I went to a Catholic school, and they hated my guts. You know, it was like I couldn't fit anywhere. My sisters had left. I had two older sisters, 11 and 16 years older, and they had kids, and I was just kind of put to the side. And I don't know exactly what happened. It just was like the pain was too great to bear.
Sure,
and
sure.
On me.
Well, so, and that was your only solution at the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And thank God you were guided by, well, obviously your angels, you know, directed you in another direction. I mean, I had a near-death experience in 2006, and I nearly bled to death after some colon surgery. And I had about a five-minute window to get help. I asked some nurses and doctors afterwards, and they confirmed that, because if the EMT hadn't gotten there quickly, I would have passed out and bled out, so... And fortunately, they got there very quickly, and initially I was very scared, excuse me, because I'd never been that sick before. And then I felt the Holy Spirit come upon me, and he told me that everything was going to be okay. And I didn't know how I knew that, but I just knew it. I ended up calming the EMTs on the way to the hospital, and my angels asked me to ask them if they had an angel story because they said it would help calm them down. And I said, does anyone have an angel story? And the nurse said she did. And I said, would you mind sharing it? And she said, 2 years before, Her father had been struck by lightning in a field, and hers was the first EMT on the scene, and she ended up saving his life. You know, so you know, what are the mathematical chances of that?
Yeah.
So they got me to the hospital, and I was in the emergency room and waiting for bed. And after a while, I could feel my soul leaving my body, and I willed myself to sit up and say, "Hey, doc, you're losing me here. I need some help." And a year later, I was on Thanksgiving. I was going to be with my family, and I started bawling, and I realized God was telling me he wanted to take me a year earlier, but he wanted a sign for me that I wanted to stay on earth and finish his work. And it was my willing myself to sit up and ask for help was a sign he was looking for. And my angels tell me I'm going to live at least another 50 years, so I'm just getting warmed up. And I'd like to say God has used my entire life to prepare me to do this family healing ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that too, because that's how I feel. I was thinking about that because with my experiences, with my own journey, it's prepared me to help others with their journeys.
Oh, absolutely. Well, because there's nothing you haven't experienced that you can help other people with or know someone who has. I mean, there's mm-hmm. nothing out there that surprises me anymore.
Yeah. I know. You know, people, like, they come to you, you know, in my ministry, and I'm sure in your ministry, and they think it's, like, this deadly secret, and they tell you, and you're like, okay. And they're like, you're not mad at me? No, you want me to tell you some of my experiences?
Let me give you some dirt on myself here, just to help you feel better. Well, I've been in Al-Anon for 32 years now. Al-Anon is a support group for friends or relatives of alcoholics or drug addicts. Mm-hmm. And the three core wounds in our culture I call SAM. It's like a SAM missile. It drops in the middle of the family and blows everything up. S stands for sexual abuse, A stands for addiction, and M stands for mental health issues. And the reason I know that is our family has all three, so we hit the genetic jackpot. When my family fractured in 1990, God helped me draw a line in the sand to start the healing process, because he said, if you don't do that, it's going to kill you and everyone you care about, and that was not an acceptable outcome.
That's interesting, because I've been in Al-Anon since 05. After I moved back home to my family of hell, I had to move back because I went back to college, and I had no job. And that's when I was fractured back open too. So what's broken open can be brought back to life and healed. What is exposed can be healed.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I believe our family's about, we had to heal apart before we could heal together. And I was reformed through Al-Anon because I was testing out my new behavior with people who had no emotional history with me. Your family is your ultimate test of your recovery and your spiritual growth, you know, because they know how to push every button that's there.
Yes, they do. And sometimes, you know, families, it's interesting. And what do you think is a good definition of the term family, quote unquote?
Okay, let me pull something right quick here. Hold on just a minute.
We were talking about family. What is a good definition of family?
I'm taking this from the introduction of my first book, The Seven Divine Lessons of Family Healing, which is a reflection on my family's own healing journey and a toolbox to help other families begin and nurture that same process. And you can buy that book and my other book, Four Reflections on Love, on my website, going to my homepage and hitting products. And again, that website address is www.myfamilyhealing.com. This is a quote from Arvella Shuler, who is the wife of the late minister, Reverend Robert Shuler. And she wrote a book in 1982 called The Positive Family Possibility, Thinking in the Christian Home.
And Mrs. Schuller defines the Christian family as a colony of caring, where two or more individuals care very, very deeply for each other. When they hurt, you show that you care. You know they care. She continues with the following comments. The family is a force of influence which helps to answer the questions. Number one, who am I? Two, where have I come from? And three, where am I going? The family is a treasure, creating the chance to risk together, solve together, learn together, cry together, and pray together. And in my mind, that's the best definition on family I've come across to date.
Interesting. Okay. I feel family is anybody that you choose to have in your inner circle that you can trust implicitly and you know you have a connection with.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we already have that connection. Well, because, I mean, we could talk about this stuff all day.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we can, because my experience
well,
is...
Well, it's who we are. Yes. You know, God has...
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Created us to be this channel of grace, you know, and mm-hmm. you know what my ministry helps people do is turn conflict and pain into joy, and help them walk into His greatness for them, you know. And I've just been very privileged to see people begin and continue that process, you know. And so my goal is to help them take that first courageous step on God's healing path, and I just ask people to trust me and take my hand, and we'll through God's grace, we'll make things better for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't know if you know it or not, but the family is the foundation of society, you know, and as the family
mm-hmm.
goes, so does the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we were growing up, you know, you fell in love, you got married, you moved in together, and then you had kids. Today, everything is backwards. You know, some people think if you don't have sex by the second date, you're a prude. You move mm-hmm. in together, you might pump out a few kids, and then you get married. Well, that's the opposite of God's natural law. And when you defy God's natural law, whether you believe it in it or not, it's mm-hmm. still in operation. That's resulting in all our social ills, you know, high unemployment, high dropout rates, increased mm-hmm. substance abuse, mental health issues, sexual abuse. You know, all these social ills are direct result of defying God's natural law. And the broken family costs our country $112 billion a year based on those particular situations.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's why they feel also, I think, if I remember history correctly, that's why the Roman Empire went down the drain, because the foundation of the family fell.
Well, exactly. Well, yeah, both Greek and Romans. The whole idea is when anything goes, everything goes. we're right in the middle of that right now. We have a conflict of the eternal value system believers versus the popular culture or the relative morality thing, you know. And the popular mm-hmm. culture believes three and four things. Number one, there are no absolute values. As I said before, God's law is in operation whether you believe in it or not. Number two, my behavior doesn't affect anyone else. Well, we're not hermits. You know.
Exactly.
Number three, I'm only wrong if I get caught.
Mm.
You know, so young people aren't, you know, we internalize right and wrong, so we knew where the danger line was. So we very rarely got close to it. And if we did, we rapidly did an about-face. A lot of young people today don't have that internal warning red light system, okay? And so they get into danger long before they even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a much more lethal world today than the one we were growing up in. And so when young people think they're immortal and they're living in a much more lethal culture, that makes for a very dangerous situation. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I help point that out to people, because I'm willing to help them deal with stuff they don't want to
talk about. So,
mm-hmm.
And I often tell them that, you know, I'm going to tell you some stuff you may not want to hear, but I think it's important you hear it for your own safety and continued healing, you know. So.
Exactly. Sometimes I'm sure when you went into recovery as I did, you know, whereas I'm going to use some, you know, recovery lingo here.
Sure.
You know, we're sick of our secrets. And once we get those out in the open, do you feel that's how healing can begin? Because how can people really begin to heal the emotional, spiritual wounds in their own families? Do you think honesty is part of that?
Oh, it's critical. See, you can't begin to heal unless you recognize and embrace the fact that we're all flawed human beings. Through Al-Anon, God has taught me to embrace myself just as He does, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yes.
So when you do that, then you're able to give that same gift to others because, as you know, being in 12-step, the only person you can change is yourself.
Right.
And we co-create our daily lives with our higher power guidance through our thinking, feeling, and behaving. Generates thoughts which may or may not lead to behavior. And I'm a recovering rager, and I used to go from rageful thinking into rageful feeling, right into rageful behavior. Are you familiar with Halt? Halt from 12 Steps? Have you heard of that?
Yep. Oh, definitely. Yes, I am very familiar with that.
Yeah, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that helps me. That's my spiritual medicine. I have to take that every day. And I have to measure my level of hunger, anger, loneliness, and tiredness. And when I get upset, I have to evaluate, well, if I act on what I'm feeling right now, what are the consequences?
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are very negative. See, but our culture is very impetuous, very reactive.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think about the consequences. They, you know, or if they do, they say, well, I'll just make an excuse and get off. Again, that's that whole victim mentality, entitlement, you know, which the culture's rabid with, right? So us eternal value people, we have to stand together and help turn back the clock, because if we don't get some, you know, better balance and put God first in our lives, then our culture will not survive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really believe that. So,
mm-hmm.
so we're fighting a war for the soul of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I was just thinking that but it really begins with me. You know, when you leave an Al-Anon meeting, you know, and I'll, you know, let it begin with me. Or lead. I forgot. It's been a while since I was up in New York and did the meetings, but I remember that. Ending the meeting like that, but also looking at, for our listeners who are unfamiliar with some of the 12 steps, there's some kind of checking in with yourself, and I used to say that at the meeting, feeling like, what do you mean? The hungry, angry, lonely, tired,
mm-hmm.
or thirsty?
Yes.
know, checking in with yourself while you're feeling the way you are, looking what's behind your motives for doing what you're doing.
Exactly.
And that's what we have to really, self-awareness is one of my personal mantras as well, checking in with yourself and seeing why you're doing the things you're doing.
Well, yeah, and you have to do that every day because it's easy to get back into your stinking thinking, you know.
Right.
Particularly if one of the big four are out of balance, you know, then it's very easy to...
yeah.
Well, it's very easy to think you're God, you know.
Yeah.
I guess that's my main character, one of my main character defects, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get into thinking I have all my own solutions, you know, but it's my own thinking that got me into trouble, you know. Mm-hmm. So as the saying goes, you can't solve a problem with the same thinking that created it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why all the 12 steps say we overcame. Yeah, we overcame, you know. So.
You know, I find it interesting because Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous are so different. I've attended both, and they're very interesting, very different. I love Al-Anon more than I love Alcoholics Anonymous. personally. That's just my thing.
Well, you know, I think they're flip sides of the same coin, okay? You know, Alcoholics Anonymous hopefully helps people to stop drinking. Al-Anon, in my opinion, helps people stop being codependent and enabling the addicts in our lives. So, you know.
Right, exactly.
Because
yeah.
we get crazy trying to control other people's behavior, you know.
Exactly.
Which is very normal, particularly, I mean, the closer you're with someone, the more, you more you feel their pain and want to help them solve it.
Exactly. While they're self-medicating with whatever chemical or drug that they can find.
Yep. Are you familiar with the 11 Promises of AA?
Yes, I am. Very much so.
Yeah, those are very powerful, aren't they?
They are extremely powerful. And I love when you go, you know, because I moved down to Florida a couple of years ago, so I've done both, you know, Al-Anon and AA, like I said, and, you know, they're different meetings, but I love when they read the promises on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's beautiful.
Yeah, to me, the 11 promises are the rewards for doing the daily footwork of the steps, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach the steps and the steps and promises as a prevention program. You don't have to be an addict in order to take advantage of them, you know.
No, you don't.
No, it's mm-hmm. a way of leading a sane and serene life. You know?
Right. It's a way of life. It really is. When you do the 12 steps and you do, you know, you look at the promises, and it helps anybody, because I think we all have an addictive personality in one way or another.
Well, you can't help it. We live in a highly addictive culture.
And so you're different if you don't go out and drink or do this or do that or do any of those things. So you're looked upon as somebody who's strange. And it's really
I've been very strange for a long time. but the biggest part of the strange happened when my family fractured in 1990, and I had no choice but to learn to put God first, you know, and which ties in with the third step, you know, became willing to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God, you know.
Right.
And when we do that to the best of our ability every day, I believe our lives become an everyday miracle, because we can see God working in our own lives, but in other people's lives, and that's a really privileged place to be.
Exactly. And it's amazing, because I have my own spiritual ritual, you know. Step 12 is daily conscious contact with God, you know, and that's what I try to do, is commune with, you know, my higher power. And I start my day off like that. And if I don't do that little thing that I do every morning, which is bring my angels and do whatever, then my day goes crappy. I've noticed that if I'm rushed and I overslept and I'm a client, and if I don't start my day that way.
Yeah, you kick into your awfulizing and your and your obsessive doing.
Yes, and you get so negative, and people are like, what did you get off from the wrong side of the bed? Yeah, I did. Literally, I did.
Sure. Yeah. No, actually, my bed's 10 feet high, and I fell off the top bunk there. You know.
Yeah, so I'm very conscious. I, like, set the alarm, and I make sure every morning, because it takes me, like, half an hour just to wake up. I'm not a morning person.
No,
so I make sure that alarm goes off two or three times. I have little buzzards every 10 minutes. And then I'm woken up, and I'm like, okay, I can start my day now. And that's
I'm not a morning person either. Yeah, so so I have my ministry, and then I have a what I call my retirement job. I'm a bagger at Kroger, which is a grocery store, and I actually have a parking lot ministry there, which is kind of interesting. You know,
parking lot, I like that.
Well, I can feel people's spiritual energy, and so if I feel it's safe to approach them, I give them a card, and just we start talking. Well, a third of our clients there breed in the shallow end of the gene pool, you know, so...
I mean, I don't know. What part of the country are you in?
I live in Dayton, Ohio, the Midwest.
Okay, so you're on the Midwest, okay. Yeah, we have Publix down here in Florida and Winn-Dixie. And that's an interesting
thing. Yeah, Publix is a nice place.
Yeah, it's interesting because you know who goes to Winn-Dixie and you know who goes to Publix.
that's funny.
You can tell you're like, yeah, ridiculous, or, you know. Yeah. But it's okay. I don't care. I go wherever, you know, I feel like going. But,
well, you go wherever the spirit moves you at that particular time.
Exactly. I don't.
Well, that's how you know life is really an adventure because you never know where you're going to be guided. So.
Yeah, you don't know, and that's kind of where intuition is being, you know, and I think that the Holy Spirit and God talk to you through your intuition. People think this is a bad thing. I don't feel it is. I mean, like in Alcoholics Anonymous, we intuitively knew how to handle situations that used to baffle us,
right.
Used to baffle us. Yeah.
Yes.
Because I would go to these open AA meetings and I would just observe and I would say that, you know, I would hear that, and I'm like, yeah, if they only knew who I really am. I use my intuition more so than you guys do, you know, and they just think it's like, ooh, ooh, stuff, and it's not.
I think people who are involved in 12 steps are bringing spirituality back into the church, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these seminaries are training ministers to be building administrators.
Mm-hmm.
So they wouldn't know what a spiritual experience was if it ran over them with a U-Haul truck, you know. So.
They wouldn't know what a spiritual awakening is if they didn't, you know, it wasn't.
Right.
If
they were in the middle of the Transfiguration. So I don't know. But, man, I'm not blaming them. It's just the way. The way they're educated and the way the culture's going, it's all about, well, it's what I call easy grace, you know? And I mean, the contemporary services are fine as bringing in some people, but I call that Starbucks Christianity, okay?
Drive-through Christianity, drive-through baptism, drive-through.
Yeah, you're dunking a big vat of a Starbucks latte or something like that, you know? You know, easy on the whipped cream. Yeah. No, and you know, if it brings people to church, that's fine. I'm not against it, but you know, my experience has been, Christ said, "Take up your cross and follow me." I mean, in my mind, that's not easy grace Christianity. And are you familiar with the Dietrich Bonhoeffer? Have you heard?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
No, I haven't.
He was a Christian. He was a minister of German descent who lived during the Nazi terrorism, and he went back to serve his people there. He was living in the States and chose to go back. And he was literally hung for treason 3 weeks before the end of the war. So that was, to me, the ultimate test of. Of faith, you know. Not that I'm going out to be Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I mean, we can have other conversations about my martyrdom of other lifetimes, but that's a whole other animal.
Yes. Yeah, I used to get mad at a relative of mine. One of my friends from that one on would say, "Yeah, get off the cross. We need the wood.
We need the wood."
And I said, "Yeah," and I said that to a relative of mine, and I thought she was gonna spit nails at me because she would be, you know, "I had done so much for you, really? Okay, get off the cross. We need the wood. You know, come on." She used to say to me, "You always have something." You know, one of my character defects is sarcasm, and I have every, you know, "You're gonna debate me. I'm gonna one up you and show you."
Well, because you have to win at all costs.
Because
if you don't win, then you're a loser, and no one likes to feel like a failure. Well, that's why the work we do in helping people heal, because the popular kit teaches people if you have a problem, then somehow you're failing, you know, which is ridiculous.
Right. Exactly.
Because most of those three issues I talked about, the sexual abuse, addiction, mental health, I believe they're 80% genetically based, okay? And so you really can't do much about it genetics. But you can change your behavior and your belief system, you know, through education, getting more information, and surrounding yourself with like-minded healing people, you know. But as you said before, you know, the first key to healing is beginning to admit that we're wounded, you know, and then beginning to identify what the specific wounds are. I call it the three A's. The three A's of healing any problem, okay? The first A is awareness, the second A is acceptance, and the third A is action. Awareness, maybe this is a problem. Acceptance, yes, it is. Action, what do I do about it, you know? But most people get stuck at the action step, and, well, why do you think that is?
Well, because they just it's the old patterns. Like me, I had to change everything in my life, including breaking away from my family. My family, immediate family. That was a hard action, but I felt I needed to do that.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I was led. And some people think that's horrible, that, you know, after my father passed away, because my mother was very abusive all my life, and, you know, decided to, my middle sister is an abuser of me when I was growing up, and she decided to take her side, on, you know, after my father's funeral, which was not her father, and I requested. You see, that's the thing. When you get in recovery, you start requesting things. You start putting yourself first, which you need to do with God's blessings.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what I had to do. And so when I requested my mother not have my abusive middle sister, who was not my dad's daughter, I was the only daughter, she said, no, she's going to be there. So I went to a friend of mine in Al-Anon, and she said, you don't have to go to the funeral. You're taking your dad down to Pennsylvania in a couple months, his ashes, and you can do it that way. Why do you need to be subjecting yourself to these people who have abused you and hurt you and invalidated you all your life? And I didn't go.
And will only continue to do so. So that's a... That's a form of self-flagellation.
Yeah, it is. But that's the action. You see, I didn't know what to do, like you said. You sometimes, and that's why I think your ministry is so important, you know, maybe somebody needs to go to you and say to you, Michael, I need help with this because I have no clue what to do.
Well, exactly. There's another piece I have. It's called How Do You Know You Need Help? I will email that to you. And you can email that to your listening audience, and that's a good way of like you say, my life's a mess, but I don't know where to begin. You know,
right. Exactly.
Well, you know, like they say in Al-Anon, it's one day at a time, one step at a time.
Right.
You know, you take the inspired. Matter of fact, I just wrote an article on inspired action. Okay, family healing, inspired action. I'll send that to you too.
Yeah, and so describe some of your ministry's products and services to our audience, our listening audience.
Okay.
And so you've been in Al-Anon since 1990s, wow. That's a long time to be in recovery.
Yeah, 1985. Yeah, that's when I started at Al-Anon myself. Let me see here. No, I don't want that one. I want the goods and services here. Okay,
yeah.
The first service is a place thing. It's a consulting thing I call the soothing space.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically is an investment of $97 an hour. It can be an email consultation or a phone consultation. Actually, people can go to that on my website again and go to services and classes and hit consultations. And it'll come up there. But basically, it's the first step people take where they begin to, as you said, open up and say, you know, I have a problem here, and I'm not even sure I know what it is, but I need help in addressing it. And that's, to me, that's the first step on God's healing path.
Mm-hmm.
And I just allow them to vent and talk about what's going on in their lives, you know, try to find out if they can identify the problem. If they can, I give them some guidance in that. And then I ask them what steps they've taken to try to resolve it and how successful they've been. And then we talk about some next steps, depending upon the situation.
Yeah. And, I mean, do you usually direct them to a 12-step program if they're open to it?
Oh, I can. Yeah, sure. I do that all the time. Yeah.
So,
well, particularly if there's an addiction issue. You know, either in themselves or, well, I had a situation where someone was asking for help with a heroin problem, and his aunt came to me, and I, you know, not knowing him personally, I said, well, I think he needs to get himself a Narcotics Anonymous. I mean, that's the first step. And then to Google heroin addict resources. You know, because you know that whole that opioid epidemic is growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, people are dropping like flies.
Yeah, and I know a friend of mine's mother was on Suboxone for years, and she had to get off of it because it's causing her somehow. I mean, it's like one problem after another.
Well, sure, and a lot of it's because heroin is, people are normally just on pain medication, okay, and then it gets expensive, and so they move on to heroin because it's cheaper. But you know, it's like putting a gun to your head. You know? And then they combine the overdoses. You're combining the heroin with this elephant tranquilizer. You know, which can kill you by itself. You know, so when you combine two lethal elements here, you're playing a very dangerous. Well, you are playing Russian roulette, but the young people have no clue. You know, you know, because the judgment part of the brain isn't fully formed until 26. And if you become addicted to drugs or alcohol, your emotional development stops at that point. So you have a 40-year-old with a coping mechanism of a 13-year-old, and people say he acts like a teenager, and it's because he is. You know.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, he is. I know a few of those. I've dated most of them.
Yeah, sure. You've been there, done that, right?
I think I did a few of those.
Well, I'm glad you're doing so. Yeah, I'm glad you're doing so well.
Yeah. My life has really turned around since I left New York, especially, and I had to walk away from my family. So, I don't even. You know, you when you go through recovery and you've gone through so much healing and work on self, it's like that's another lifetime too.
Oh, it is. Well, yeah. Well, you're literally living in another dimension, you know. So,
yeah.
And you don't want to go back to the old ways.
No.
Because it's too painful. You know.
It's too stupid too. You're like, why did I do that in the first place? And, oh yeah, I was growing up. Yeah, that's what I was stuck. That's what was modeled for me.
Well, that's why they call it dope, right?
Because
you're getting real stupid, you know. another service is I do a spiritual growth series called Be the Holy Child of God That You Are. And it's a six-class series. I do a face-to-face six-class series in churches and or other spiritual growth groups. Or I also have a four-class self-study program. So if people want more information about that, they can email me at patriarch@woh.r.com, and I'll be happy to send them information on that. And it's a series that helps you determine God's purpose for your life and provides the power to carry that out. So it's very powerful, and the first class is how to write a personal spiritual mission statement, which is through which you determine God's will for you. And I wrote mine in 1995, and it's manifested itself 100% since that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the second class is Addiction, Grace, and Family Healing. The third class, which is one of my favorite, is women teaching your man how to become more emotionally present to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we men could learn that from each other, we would have learned it a long time ago. But we can't, so I hate to put another burden on you women, but if you want us to be more emotionally sensitive, you're going to have to teach us how to do that. Now, I can teach other women and men how to do that, but I've been doing this for a long time. But my ministry is really a tribute to women because you've really taught me to honor my intuitive side. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the last class is walking into God's greatness for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I have two books out. I said it's under products on my webpage, the homepage, and again, those books are the 7 Divine Lessons of Family Healing and 4 Reflections on Love, or 4 Revelations on Love, and they're both mm-hmm. in ebook form, and they're only $10 a piece, so that's a real steal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I have my coaching program, which is called the Family Trailblazers Program.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a 3-month coaching program where I help my clients manage their number one family healing priority.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that is whatever they deem it to be. So, and that often comes from that initial soothing space conversation. I suggest, would you like to consider this next step? You know, so.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And again, if your audience are interested in getting more information about that, again, just email me at patriarch@woh.r.com.
Cool.
And that's fun. It's a 3-month program, and it's renewable every 3 months. And it's a conversation like we're having right now. You know,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we're a team, and I'm here to help families walk into God's greatness for them, because He wants nothing but the best for them. There's a book out called The God Memorandum,
mm-hmm.
and it's by Ogmandino, and in it, it's God's love letter to humanity, and in it, God says to humanity, "You are my greatest miracle." And if God believes that about us, how can we believe any less of ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, like yourself. Oh, I have a meditation I want to send you. You know, I listen to that every day. I'll make a note here to send the meditation. It's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, meditations are great. I love meditations, definitely.
Well, I use them in my coaching, you know, because I think, well, as you know, they help people get centered or learn how to get centered.
Exactly.
And exactly. Yeah, which is another gift of the Holy Spirit, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as you know, all this spiritual healing is not woo-woo work. It's even though that's what people are afraid that they're getting into, you know. But
actually, no, it's a great thing.
No, actually, it's just the opposite.
Yeah. It helps you get the issues out of the tissues, and helps on the, at least on my journey with the 12 steps, and then doing energy work and counseling and all the work that I've done.
Sure.
It's a support to help you move through your issues a little bit quicker.
Yes.
You know, sometimes you're stuck in something and you want to get out of it.
Well, and it brings them to the surface, as you said, a lot quicker.
It does, and people don't like it, but hey, when you start on a spiritual path, as you step on it, it usually brings up all the stuff that you need to let go, so you can be a true light bearer of God.
Yeah, I'll send you my book list. It's a list of about 60, 70 books that have been very helpful to me in my own spiritual growth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a book on it called When My Soul Just Opened Up by Alanya Van Zandt.
Oh, yes. Yep. Yeah, she's really good.
And she's a friend of Oprah's. I'm hoping one day to be a friend of Oprah. I'm working on that. So, it's good to be a friend of Amy right now. But you know, I know that'll lead to being a friend of Oprah. So.
Yeah, pretty soon. Well, we're coming to a close on the show, which is, wow, I don't know where this time's gone. Tell people what's your final message that you would like to leave with the audience today, and how can they contact you, Michael?
Well, I think the message I would leave with them is that there's no shame in reaching out for help, that mm-hmm. all families, whether they recognize it or not, are afflicted by some wound, and stepping on the spiritual path as a way of becoming more aware of that. And I'm here to help people take that first courageous step on God's healing path, and I do it at their own speed, in their own way. And they can, for further support, they can call me at 937-435-8468 or email me at patriarch, that's patriarch, at wohor.com. Again, or they can visit my website at www.myfamilyhealer.com. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to share with your special audience, and I look forward to hearing from them and continuing our dialogue, too.
Sure. That would be great. Well, everyone, this is Amy Toy. This is Angel Answers with Amy Toy. And until next week, join us for another exciting guest on The Path with the Angels. May God be with you. Take care. Bye-bye.